Cool World, it's your boy Pete Walsh, a.k.a. Lamborghini Petey, episode 73, I think, 72 of the Respect the Game podcast. Had a nice little stretch Monday? Yeah, Monday. So about 10 days ago, we had Mike Beasley and Shinee Ogumike on. Shit was mad fun, but I'm looking forward to this one because I got my boy, my ace, my guy, Franklin Kaye on. Frankie, was good, sir?
Yo, what's going on?
I'm chilling, man. How you feeling?
Good. This is like the second time in a month I've been here, man.
Feels great, man. I feel like this is the only time you and I really like sit down and chat is on these pods because either one of us is out or we're just busy with other things and we don't sit next to each other during the day. So it's like
pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, we're just on Twitter mostly if we're going to be completely honest.
Slack.
Yeah. We just we'll send each other tweets and be like, yo, you see this? And yeah. But anyway,
yeah,
it's good to sit down and actually talk.
Good to finally talk to you a little bit.
But today we dropped all three covers for Slam 212. We got Michael Porter Jr. on one. Duke's Marvin Bagley III on the other, and six of the many rookies on the third. So you were in Missouri for a few days.
Yeah.
Jet setting from LA to Missouri.
Yeah.
And spent some time with Michael Porter Jr. and his family. I mean, I did not know that he had like 43 family members currently on campus at Missouri, but, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the experience, like chilling with Mike, like what kind of kid is he? This is the second time you've done a story with him. You did one when he was at Nathan Hale too, right?
Yeah, we did the Big Punk feature. Mm-hmm. Nathan Hale, we worked with him also when he was in Brooklyn for the Jordan Brand Classic. Him and DeAndre Ayton and a couple of the other top five players in the country for the 2017 class. And then obviously this one was a little more intimate because it was, with his family, with his coaches in his hometown of Columbia, so it was pretty cool, so he grew up in, actually grew up in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. And then he moved over to Missouri once his dad got a job with the women's team in Missouri. He was the director of basketball operations. This is like 2010. And so he moves from Indianapolis to Missouri. And it's, it's so many different like cool factors in terms of how he grew up in it. One of them is the fact that he was homeschooled all the way up to high school. So there's a cool part of the story where we were talking. He's basically telling me, like, when he moved into Missouri, he didn't go to school. So his only friends were his basketball friends back in Annapolis. And basically once he moves into Columbia, which is not really a hotbed for basketball, he was kind of stuck with no friends for a good amount of time. And so he would literally just go to the gym, he had access to Missouri's facilities. And so he ended up being there a lot. And next thing you know, thanks to a variety of things that did not go as planned, he ends up right back in Columbia now wearing a Mizzou uniform. So it's a pretty cool story, his story personally, and then obviously the bigger family story. He has, two sisters, Bree and Sierra, on the women's team, basketball team, and then he has his younger brother, Jonte, who reclassified this summer just to be with him this 1 year at Missouri. So that's four right there. Then his aunt, which is his mom's sister, is the head coach for the women's team, and his dad is the assistant coach for the men's team. So that's six different family members part of the program.
I mean, it's amazing, and I mean, it's just something I can't remember this ever happening, like this many family members involved in one program,
right?
I mean, it's cool, and I mean, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Obviously Mike is,
he might be the number one pick.
That's, exactly.
Yeah, so it's not even like it's just some random kid. It's an amazing story when you think of the fact that he might be the top player in the country this year, and to see the fact that there's all these, different factors go into this, how his family got together all under one campus. It's a pretty fascinating story. But, and it's a lot of pressure. I mean, we would think the last year they made a tournament was a few years ago. And we could go back to when Markel went to, Washington and tried to turn that program around and did not work out. When Ben Simmons tried to do the same thing, LSU did not work out. It's different that he's the hometown kid, and in a way there's some pressure on that. And he even says at one point that he's taken a little more personal because he's from there and sort of knows the city and knows his friend, his friends will be there and so forth. But it's kind of different, I think he does mention a story at one point, and he kind of makes a good point when he went to, last year his dad takes a job, with the, Washington Huskies. So he moves to Seattle, and that team, the Nathan Hale team, was like 3-18 the previous year before he gets there. Brandon Roy obviously comes in. He comes in. They get a couple of other kids. And next thing you know, they go undefeated. Number one team in the country. So he's coming in, but it will not just be him. You know, Jonte is actually a top 50 recruit for the class of 2018 before he classified at 2017. They got Jeremiah Tillman, who was at one point committed to Illinois before the coaching change there. He ended up going to Missouri. Blake Harris, who was top 100, who was supposed to go with him to Washington before Lorenzo got fired. So they have like legitimately four top 100 players coming in at once. And obviously, there will be that adjustment period. You got four new kids in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
But it's a little – people are going to try to compare it to a Washington LSU, but it's a little different, and this team is a little stacked in terms of, you know, top 100 players in that starting lineup.
Yeah, and it's super interesting, just to piggyback off of the point you made about Simmons and Markell. Like, Missouri, not necessarily a basketball powerhouse at this juncture, and he's probably going to be the number one pick. So – it's almost as if for the third straight year, it just doesn't matter where you go to college.
Right.
So, I mean, is this a trend you think is going to continue? I mean, who's the top? So Zion is, and
who R.J. Barrett?
R.J. Barrett, who hasn't committed yet. Right?
They both have not committed. Yeah. They both should be committing in November, so we should probably know the next couple of months.
But they're like, they're mostly like Kentucky, Carolina.
I think R.J. more is, R.J. is more top. I mean, R.J. has no like... you know, like
allegiance,
right? Because he's not from, he's from Canada, so it's not like there's any hometown. Whereas I think Zion's a little bit different. Like, there's like been a lot of, you know, rumors on Twitter that Clemson might be in the mix. Since, you know, they're from, you know, he's from Columbia, South Carolina. He's from Greenville, the Greenville area, Spartanburg area. So you have Clemson, you have, you know, South Carolina, obviously themselves, and so, but yeah, and you have, you know, UNT up there. So I think with Zion, he's probably a little torn in between where. There are some obviously high Division I schools in that area that have not necessarily been known for basketball as of lately, mostly known for football. Whereas for RJ, it's probably a little different. He's from Canada. I don't think he has any allegiance to any particular program. But yeah, like going back to your point, it's kind of very interesting in the last few years. There's sort of this trend of either, you know, I think a lot of players, well, they realize themselves that they're a brand themselves and that they can draw in talent, which is kind of what they've been trying to do the last couple of years, bring in, you know, most of these guys through the AU circuit. They already know a lot of the players that are from, you know, five states away. And they've, you know, developed that bond at such a young age that they feel they can sort of do their own little, I guess you could say, the NBA version of what the guys are doing at the NBA level in terms of, you know, coming in together and forming these super teams. Mm-hmm. But doing it with teams that are, you know, programs that are not necessarily known as being top notch. I think it will be a thing that it's, and you can already see the last few years, just becoming a common theme. But I'm very curious to see what do the top schools, you know. So I mean, Duke is not—it's not like Duke is struggling, like
or Kentucky. Or Kentucky, yeah. You know, so it's just even... one kid.
Exactly.
You know, it happens to be the top kid, but you know, there's 99 other kids in the top 100 who are not far behind the number one kid as in terms of talent. But Porter, you know, he's kind of gotten comparisons to KD at this point, but you've seen him play. So how would you describe his game? Like, is KD an apt comparison?
Last year, 6'10", he was the best, in my opinion, the best shooter in the country. You know, so when you're 6'10", you're the best high school shooter in the country. It speaks volumes. I mean, the kid can shoot from just about anywhere. Well-spoken, very smart. I mean, body-wise, I mean, he looks, you know, cut, like, pretty ripped compared to what he was just 2 years ago.
I mean, just from a physical standpoint, there's just, in my opinion, no reason for him to be in college for a year. Like, he should be in the NBA.
Correct.
He should be getting ready for the NBA right now.
I mean, there were a lot of people that were saying he would have been a top five pick had he gone to this, you know, in this year's draft. And you can even say the same thing for Marvin Bagley, who's our other, you know, cover boy. So with Mikowicz, you know, you're getting a 6'10 shooter who can shoot from anywhere on the floor, can play anywhere from the two to the four, two, three, or four. You know, you're talking multiple positions. You're talking about one of the top scorers. But I think, like I said, it will be interesting to see can he make other players better. Can he, how, you know, how would that work in the dynamics of what it translates to Missouri basketball? He's done it at the high school level. You, like I said, you saw a team that was 3-18 the previous year come in, and now they go undefeated. Obviously the SEC is a little different, you know, just a tad bit different, but I think it'll be very interesting. I do think that they're a playoff, they're a tournament team.
First time in a minute.
In a minute, I think it's been like 4 or 5 years or something like that. I mean, I think the last 3 years they haven't even surpassed 10 wins, and that's in total. That's not even counting I think conference. They've had like 3 wins every year or something like that.
You mean Terrence Phillips ain't leading him to the promised land, man?
Nah,
that's my guy. You know I love him.
Brandon Jen is a little brother, little bro. So it will be very interesting to see. I mean, they're obviously going to improve, but I think it will be a tight race with him, between him and Marvin Bagley for top draft pick.
Yeah, so let's talk about Bagley a little bit. We've talked about him in the past, a little more heavy on this podcast. The last time you were on, we just talked. It was right after he had reclassified and committed to Duke. But I mean, that team is just stacked, man.
Right.
Top to bottom, they just got the most talented team in the country, I would say. I don't know. Kentucky's totally. Obviously always up there, but I feel like Duke, just in terms of talent this year.
Top heavy for sure.
Yeah. Top to bottom is stacked. Yeah. Obviously, it takes time for guys to fit in and play. Like, this isn't, you know, it's tough. Making the jump from high school to college is it's a huge jump because, you know, you're playing against equal competition every night. It's not like in high school where you're playing, like, maybe one team has two or three top guys and the rest are just like, you know, you and I going to just happen to go to the high school or whatever. So it'll be crazy. But I mean, Bagley is another guy who's probably NBA ready, as you said.
Yeah.
I mean, so how do you think his game translates to the next level?
To the NBA level?
No, to college.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting because, like, he's, like you were saying, he's sharing the, you know, the floor with, like, five of the top, you know, five-star recruits, other five-star. And so, like, with Michael, you're going to see him get his numbers easily. With Marvin, he first doesn't have to do that because it's not necessary. Like, they can easily cruise through most wins without him having to, you know, go for 30. And two, you know, Marvin's game is a little different. And, you know, he's a big man. You know, and what he's always been known for is just how dominant his, you know, physique-wise, body-wise. He went into, you know, summer league. You know, he was out there at the Drew League and easily just kind of going through the basket. I mean, you're talking about playing against grown men.
Yeah, going against, like, DeRozan, Harden, guys like that. Obviously not forwards, but, you know, NBA guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so his body physique is next level. I mean, it's NBA ready. But it'll be interesting to see how fans react in terms of what Marvin can do surrounded by, you know, four other five-star recruits and what Michael Porter does in comparison to not necessarily that same kind of talent. It's going to be a hard – I think it's going to be one of those things that depends on what you like in terms of what you're, you know, looking out for in talent. But you can easily flip a coin and go with either one of them. But like you say yourself, you know, Duke is so stacked that I believe they can easily go, you know, not easily, but they can, you know, very well, you know, go undefeated. You know, all the way into the
undefeated
into the tournament time. I think so.
Word.
I think so.
Even in the ACC.
Even in ACC.
Wow,
that's a lot of talent, man.
that's crazy, man.
I think they have a shot.
So I'm looking at our rankings now. We have them number one, with Michigan State right behind them. So, yeah, I mean, you blew me away with the undefeated thing.
I had to come because I'm.
If you're not coming with the hot takes, you might as well not even be here. But I mean, are they – so the last team that did that was Kentucky, right? Or did, like, Wichita State may have done it in one of those years too?
Yeah, but Kentucky was that one team where it was like –
yeah.
It's hard to do – we've talked about this before. It's hard to do with freshmen. You're asking 18, 19-year-olds to come in and gel in, like, a month and a half and then go out there and, like, you know, translate it to wins.
So that team had – sorry to cut you off. That team had Towns, Booker – Trey Lyles,
all those guys,
I mean, they were stacked.
Yeah.
They were on the cover of Slam. Not like we didn't do a photo shoot. We just had like we just had the headshots.
Yeah,
still
the cover.
But it was a great cover. But would you say that you know, Duke is comparable to that team talent wise?
Talent wise, yes.
Yeah,
I would say so. Talent wise, I mean, look, the thing is that we talked about this last time, Coach. It's so. Coach K is the one dude that can actually say, I was able to win with a bunch of freshmen when he did it with, you know, Tyus Jones and Jaleel Okafor and Grayson Allen like 3 years ago. You know what I mean? So if anybody can convince freshmen to play together, gel, and go all the way, it's Coach K. You know, he did it 3 years ago. You know what I mean? You can ask Calipari how difficult that is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even the year that Cal did it, he had like Terrence Jones.
Yeah, Deron Lamb. They both came back.
Who were sophomores. Right.
They were sophomores,
sophomores. But I mean, you just need that, you know, all those teams have that kind of not necessarily transcendent big man, but dominant big man. You know, Anthony Davis was there, Kentucky, you know, Jahlil Okafor.
Right.
You can say whatever you want about him in the pros now, but in college he was so good.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of got Bagley who kind of fits that mold.
Exactly.
So, you know, I mean, they're far and away the front runner right now, but we'll see, man. As you and I always say at tournament time, like, it's all about, it's more so about experience than
oh, yeah.
talent.
Oh, yeah.
So we should talk a little bit about our third cover, which features the six rookies. Oh, man, I got to do this off the top of my head. So it's Zoe, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, De'Aaron Fox, Dennis Smith, and Fultz. Who are not far removed from being in college, obviously, going into the rookie year.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, just looking at the past, and we mentioned this in the story or that Max wrote, that the past two covers we did was 14 mm-hmm. and 96. Mm-hmm. So 96, obviously, that's with Kobe and Ray Allen, Iverson, who wasn't on the cover, but right. was part of that class, yep. All those guys, mm-hmm. Steve Nash, yep. and then 2014, still playing out.
Yeah.
And we were saying before we turned the mics on, like,
right. Jabari.
Between Wiggins, Jabari, Embiid, it's just been, like, a lot Aaron of injuries Gordon. And consistencies. Yep. So it's been tough. Like, it's really tough to gauge. But, I mean, obviously we feel confident that this mm-hmm. class is – worthy of a cover yeah. and going to be, you know, next up in the league.
Right.
But, I mean, what are your thoughts on the class overall? I mean, you've been following these kids since they were 15, yeah. 16 years old. So, how do you see their games translate yeah. to the NBA?
Well, you know, what's funny. So, like, we go back to that 2014 class and, like, this 3-year gap. I mean, we, you know, I mean, there's been a bazillion articles written about this. Like, just the fact that within the last 3 years, we've gone, it's become literally a point guards, a guards heavy NBA league, mm-hmm. and also like a positionless basketball. We've moved into that in terms of the big man. And so when you look at that other, you know, the 2014 class that we had with the cover, you know, Jabari, Wiggins, Joel Embiid, these are all big guys that we were hoping would come in and sort of like dominate. But as they were coming in, the league and the way the offense was being set, it was completely changing.
Right.
So now you have this class, which is literally all these guys we mentioned, all guards, Markel, Lonzo,
yeah,
Dennis.
I mean, Tatum and Jackson are kind of tweeners.
Aside from Tatum and Jackson, these are all, you know, guards, even going people that did not make the covers, Donovan Mitchell and so forth, Malik Monk. And so this is the, you know, guard heavy at the top class. And so I think, and that's where the league is going. And so I like our chances of saying that this class will live up to the billing. Whereas that class of 2014, it was that weird period where it was the league was going into a guard heavy and guard centric league. And so as we see this class, these are, you know, what, four of the six cover guys are all, you know, point guard, shooting guards, combo guards. You know, Tatum obviously, and Tatum and Josh Jackson are probably a perfect example of like forwards that can play positionless basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can move them around into different positions, either above or before the four or the two. I think this is representative of what basketball in the league looks like today. You know, positionless, guard heavy, guard centric.
Yeah.
It'll be very interesting because the Lonzo is like one guy that sort of, I don't want to say like every other guard. You know, with De'Aaron and so forth, are all, you know, score first or, you know, shoot first guards that can also obviously distribute and find the open man. Well, Lonzo's that one guy is the opposite. You know, he's more of the Chris Paul, you know, type of offense, and so it will be interesting to see. Where he has in terms of like you know where what the guards do today in terms of Russell Westbrook and James Harden, what the point guard quote unquote is today, and what Lonzo's game is resembles like, you know, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean these kids have been covered so extensively. Yeah. I mean in Slam, ESPN, everywhere up to this point. So it's just going to be awesome to finally see them play. I mean it's going to be. I mean, some guys are not necessarily going to disappoint, but, like, you know, they're going to take some time to, mm-hmm. to get acclimated to the game. And,
right.
you know, there's always these extenuating circumstances with vets and everything. But I think all six of these guys are going to just show flashes of brilliance throughout the season.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just get people really excited for the future.
Right. You have Ben Simmons, who you know, was a cover last year yeah. and never played.
Yeah.
So it should be
he's
very
he's considering
exciting.
This class. But, yeah, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what's going on in college basketball right now, considering we just put two of the top college players on the cover. But, you know, I'm reading this ESPN article, so I don't butcher this because I definitely don't want to get sued for libel going forward. Don't want the feds coming into the Slam office. But last week, you know, the FBI pretty much blew the doors off the
pretty much
the NCAA and came through with a just bombshell of I don't want to say a story because the FBI doesn't report stories, they actually like arrest people,
right?
But
big difference.
You know, so as of this recording, 10 people, including four college coaches, were arrested as part of a 2-year investigation into bribes and other corruption in the sport. Rick Pitino was fired. The Louisville AD was fired. There's reports of the FBI raiding agents' offices and getting subpoenas for Nikes and the Adidas of the world. So, I mean, to say the shit has hit the fan is a total understatement.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, like, we were not – I don't think the word surprised was the best way to do it. I mean, we were shocked, but it's, like, the worst-kept secret in the basketball world is that, like, kids were getting paid to go to schools. I don't think I'm out of line by saying that.
Definitely not.
But, I mean, it's crazy that – the FBI came in and basically did the NCAA's dirty work. I mean, the corruption has been going on in college basketball for as long as, you know, you and I have been covering it, but dating back decades, decades and decades. And, you know, all the AAU tournaments, the, you know, EYBLs of the world, the Adidas Nations of the world, you know, you don't have to be an idiot to know that something fishy was going on. But and I'm just choosing my words carefully here.
Please do.
But I mean, it's still, you know, it sucks. And the worst part about it is that the ones that are going to get screwed are the kids. They're going to be affected, not necessarily the most by this, but in the worst possible way.
Right.
I've been a big proponent of kids should be getting paid,
right?
You know, not necessarily not in high school, but certainly in college. And you know, I don't agree with the one and done rule as a whole. I've said that on this podcast many times, written about it many times. And you know, this goes to show why. Like, these kids are either gonna get money under the table, or they're gonna get screwed out of playing,
right?
So I guess what's your overall, as someone who's tied into the grassroots scene, and what's your, you know, and feel free to choose words carefully or not comment at all, but what was your overall reaction when you first heard the news?
Yeah, I will do that. So I don't even know where to start. So
that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg, and it's like so much is coming and being revealed on like an hourly basis that it's hard to even get a full grasp of what's going on.
Right. But you know what? You know what's a good starting point? Let's start from what you brought up, NCAA, which I think it's kind of what it comes down to. And they're the common denominator of everything that's happening here, right? So you have the NCAA has failed for decades.
Well,
to control this.
Yeah.
To control what's been happening.
And sorry to interrupt you, but I wouldn't say failed, but I would say turned a blind eye to because of how much money they were making.
Right. Yeah. And so here and there, they turn up, you know, whatever. But every now and then, they would get a kid in trouble, whatever, you know, slapping a wrist to a coach. Kid would not be allowed to play and so forth. It's gotten to the point where obviously most coaches thought and saw them as a joke. Most teams saw them as a joke. In terms of the rules, it was a wild, wild west. People can get away with whatever they want. And so here comes the FBI, who after a 2-year investigation, right? 2-year investigation. This is not like the Boy Scouts. This is the FBI.
Oh, my God. I know.
Right?
It's ridiculous.
FBI. And they only found 4 coaches to do this and 1 agent to do this, right? FBI, not the Boy Scouts. The FBI did this.
Yeah.
People that, like, you know, they catch bad guys. So, first of all, it's super, super unfair to the kids who we shouldn't even mention their names, who are now being dragged and being shamed for taking money from people and entities that were going to make millions off them while they were not going to give them a single cent. And now they're being dragged to the floor, being threatened to potentially not even be allowed to play college basketball.
And to that point, probably being told when they're, you know, allegedly being given this money that, don't worry, kid, we got you.
Right.
Everything's going to be cool.
This, we pay this guy and this guy. And they're playing college basketball.
They're playing in the NBA. You think so-and-so was just in the All-Star game. You think he wasn't getting paid. Like,
right.
You know, you're telling a 16, 17-year-old kid this, and his family, who probably comes from – potentially comes from a tough background. Like, what the hell are they going to do? Be the only idiots in college basketball not taking money? Like,
exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. So they're being dragged right now and being shamed for doing the obvious thing that anybody would do in their position. Then you have four coaches who I'm not advocating for fraud or corruption, whatever, everything that was going on here, but four coaches who are being made example of something that every program directly, indirectly, some way, somehow hasn't been engaged in at some point. You know what I mean? So you have four programs who, by the way, after 2 years, they came up with four. I don't know how you come up with four random coaches, but that's a whole other story. You might as well, if this is what you're doing, if what you're saying that this is legal, you shouldn't do this, and you might as well just, we talked about it, just shut down college basketball because you're literally just randomly slapping the wrist random coaches, random kids.
Yeah, if you investigate and uncover everyone, like,
yeah,
you
just
you,
might
you
as well
and
shut
I
down.
Will be suiting up.
Yeah,
next
exactly.
Year for your team.
Oh yeah, I'm ready.
Me too. I'm
ready. I don't know what the FBI. What's the end game here? Like, what are you going to do? You're going to shut down college basketball? Because if you keep digging, that's what you're going to find out. That this is literally what it's been going on for decades. Just about everyone and their mothers involved. I don't even know. Yeah, like you're saying, like, it's still developing, and it's even hard to gauge what are you going to ultimately do. You're just going to literally just be like, okay, from now moving on forward, let's do things this way. Let's forget about what happened, or we're just going to like blow the whole thing up. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, as soon as they announced that like anonymous tip line, that shit probably blew up with not only. I mean, with rival coaches probably calling and be like, I have a tip that this guy did this and this guy did that. Like, it's still a very competitive thing. Like, if a coach can get ahead on another school or program to either land a kid or win games, you don't think they're going to make that call?
Right.
So,
and those that already got arrested, are they going to flip? Are you going to jail for this? Yeah. Or are you going to start naming some names and not go to jail for this? You know, so it's very interesting to see where it goes from here. We talked about this off the air, you know, and it's going to obviously trickle down to the way grassroots basketball works because, you know, a lot of these, every single sneaker brand obviously has their own league circuit, grassroots league, teams, camps, so forth. And I don't think it takes a genius to realize that, you know, there's obviously end game within what they're doing at the grassroots circuits, what it goes to college, and then what happens at the NBA, you know. So it's all one big, you know, train track. So I don't. What happens with that now? Are we going to have even a summer circuit next year? I mean, there's so much questions. I think it's going to take a while for everything to get sort of settled. But my prediction is you either blow the whole thing up or literally just say, you know, hey, like, everybody's doing this. Let's figure out a way moving forward how to – because you can't send a whole college basketball to jail. Like,
I mean, would you just shut down the sport? Totally.
Exactly.
No way. But, I mean, this is me just – thinking in like the total optimist thought process, it is never gonna happen. But I mean, if anything, this should be reason to start paying kids to go to college, legally paying kids to start going to college.
Yeah,
never gonna happen. I'm not gonna say never, but not gonna happen in the near future. Yeah. And I don't think even something like this is gonna make it happen. But
yeah,
if anything, hopefully it'll just rile up people to kick the tires on making that happen, trying to figure out a way, you know, because these kids are taking advantage of,
right,
you know, because of their situations and because they're flashed big money and they're 16 years old, and who wouldn't say no to, you know, six figures when you're 16 to play basketball, regardless of the potential consequences.
Right.
And the potential consequences up until this part have been, as you said, like a slap on the wrist and maybe you miss like four or five games. No one's ever been like booted from campus or college basketball because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, that's the dreamer in me, hoping that kids will start getting paid, because, you know, these kids, their financial earning age is so much different than the normal humans. Like, their peak is like 17 to, you know, 35 if they're lucky, right, to last that long.
Yeah.
Whereas someone like you and I, it's like
gradually, you know, working up. Yeah.
We're going to be working until, God, mm-hmm, I don't even want to say this out loud, but like 65, 70. And, yeah, you know, our earning, yeah, you know, they'll earn more in the short. They'll earn a greater amount in the short term. But,
right,
you know, over 50 years, like, you know, you can't play basketball at a professional level for 50 years. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it.
Yep.
So they should be getting paid when they're 17, 16, totally, 17 100%. Years old, 18 years old. So I don't know. I hope, you know, and NCAA definitely knows this. You know, they're no dummies, but
yeah,
they're just, you know, they're making money hand over fist while these kids play, right, for, are supposed to be playing for free, but right, clearly they haven't been. So I don't know. I mean, those are, I guess, just my very general thoughts. I'm still kind of just trying to process everything, but
yeah, I have a feeling this is going to be a whole year thing. Like, it's going to be updates every other month or so in terms of new bombshells dropping.
Oh, for sure. So. For sure. For sure. For sure. So, I mean, hopefully, I don't know, we'll have a season and we'll be able to talk about said season as it goes along, because you and I have always been, have always connected over college hoops. So, oh, yeah, hopefully we'll still be able to,
oh, yeah,
cause it's literally right around the corner. Yeah. I know we just got some emails about media days and all, mm-hmm, that. So I'm looking forward to it. But I don't know. That's all I got. You got anything else?
Nah, I think we covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah. But Slam 212 out now on a much more lighter, happier note.
Yeah.
Head to Slam Online to read Frankie's story on Michael Porter, Figman's story on Marvin Bagley, Max's stories on the rookies, and, you know, we're always pumping out stuff on there. So thanks to everyone for listening. Shout out to my guy in Australia who DM'd me saying that he was a big fan of the show. Shouts to we're going international, wow, man. I'm telling you. But Frankie, thank you, man. We'll do this again soon. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
Peace.